Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's Thursday, which is unusual for us, and it's Christmas Eve is what it is.
Also unusual for
us. And that makes this the last Six Colors podcast of 2020.
Does it?
Okay. All right. Story checks out.
Mm-hmm. So, year in review.
I you can't see me because this is a podcast, but I'm holding a lighter and a can of hairspray.
Oh,
that's how I feel about 2020.
Burn it all down. Well, time does that.
Yeah, that takes too long. I'm all about the here and now, about being proactive.
All right, so be it. I don't know. I finally wrote something about the iPhone 12 mini and Pro Max because I had that on my list of things to do for a long time because I didn't get those in advance of the embargo reviews, and I got them the same time that I got my M1 Max stuff in advance under embargo. And so obviously that was the priority, but then I'm doubly behind. And so I just decided to live with those phones for a while. So I finally got that one out off my to-do list, and it's kind of a 1 month with a iPhone 12 mini kind of thing. But what finally spurred me into action is that I picked up an iPhone 12 accidentally and was like, "Oh no, this is too large a phone." And then I thought, "Oh, there it is. I'm ruined now. It did it. I adapted to the 12 mini."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
It's good. It's nice.
Yeah.
You use it for a while. I think this is the truth. This is like a law of phones, which is whatever phone you use, your brain in a couple of weeks pretty much defines that as the standard size, and all other phones seem weird.
It makes sense. I mean, I think the brain, the elasticity of the brain is such that anything that you do for long enough repetitively seems normal, right? Like that was the whole thing with natural scrolling, right? Back in Lion, when they changed the direction of scrolling on your trackpads.
Oh, yes.
It seemed bananas. And then a week or two in, you're like, oh, this is how it's always been. No, it wasn't. But now your brain is pretty much adapted to it. So, you know, it's not the case with everything. For example, famously, earlier this year, I bought a mechanical keyboard and I used it for a week. And then I decided I could not do it anymore.
Interesting.
So now it sits lonely on my shelf of discarded tech stuff, and I think, well, I gave it a shot.
Yeah,
what keyboard? I'll find a home for it someday. That was a Keychron.
Yeah, they're not as good as the one that I've got that I use all the time. The Vortex is better.
Know,
the Keychrons are fine. They're fine.
It turns out that I'm very happy with the Magic Keyboard.
Yeah,
I actually think that's a perfectly fine keyboard for me, and especially now
keyboard.
That I've been using the MacBook Air more, the M1. Very happy with that keyboard, actually.
Yeah.
I think that keyboard is actually really nice. You know what? I would not have believed it because it still has some trade-offs, but it frankly is, I like it. I like it just fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I have really gotten to enjoy the travel of the Vortex Race 3, which is the one that, that's the one that I really like. Which does not come in a Bluetooth configuration, which is unfortunate, but I have, you know, I'm using a desktop Mac, so I've got everything plugged in and it's fine. It's under my desk. I don't see the cables other than coming out of the keyboard. They're like, they disappear and then they attach to my computer somewhere under there. And I like it, and you know, I like the sound and I like the movement and all of that, but then I switch to the MacBook Air keyboard and it's fine. It's fine. Like or the Magic Keyboard for the iPad Pro, same thing. They're good. They're and that's a good thing, right? Like we spent many hours during the Butterfly era talking about how it didn't need to be the best keyboard. It just needed to be a keyboard that was good for everyone, and it is now.
Yeah. I think I didn't buy a MacBook for a long time because of the keyboard issues and. Then when they announced we fixed it by going back to the old design guide.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, all right. I mean, it still feels different than the old, you know, if I pull out my 11-inch Air, which I still have around, pull that out, you know, it's a different keyboard, but it's still it's still perfectly possible. Yeah,
for the longest time, I used at my desk, I used a Logitech keyboard, that Bluetooth keyboard that was essentially a duplicate of the MacBook Air, old MacBook Air keys. And there is something to having the same keyboard everywhere. I do think, just because your brain does adapt, and then you're always using the keyboard instead of like the one keyboard A and keyboard B.
Yeah.
And I did like that, but I started using that MacBook Air a lot less, and then I changed to the mechanical keyboard, and I liked that experience, and so now I'm kind of ruined. But I honestly this is a case where like there are so many different levels of keyboards. Like, I appreciate a mechanical keyboard, but I'll tell you, I'm not a keyboard snob, and there's so many keyboard snobs, and it's fine to be one. It's fine to be one. And then you go the extra mile and you become Mike Hurley and you begin assembling keyboards. Which is also fine. But for me, like, I got this one and it's like, yeah, I like it. This is nice. I like how noisy it is and I like the movement of it, and that's great. But I always have thought that Apple's laptop keyboards, other than the butterfly keyboard, were good keyboards. And I would be more than happy. You know what? I actually kind of like the, because I had that MacBook Air for so long, I kind of like the Apple Blue wireless keyboard that's before the Magic Keyboard.
Yeah, I have one of those somewhere.
I have one of those too. And I kind of like that one too. Like, that was a really good keyboard. And then the Logitech is basically felt a lot like that and was more, a little more suited for desktop use.
I kind of hope, I don't know. I mean, you know, if Apple redesigns the iMac next year, I kind of hope that they'll bring some of the refinements from that, the laptop keyboard. I know, you know, like, it seems counterintuitive to think, well, it's a, you know, it's a wireless keyboard. So there's so many more tolerant. Like, you don't have to worry about engineering it to fit in a laptop case, so you can get away with much more. But there are certain little details. For example, the Magic Keyboard on the desktop does not have the inverted T for the arrows. Yeah. It's like, I would like that.
I would almost put money down, and I'm not a betting person, so I won't, but I would almost put money down that if they do a new iMac at some point with a redesign, they will probably do a new Magic Keyboard. What would that be? Magic Keyboard 3 maybe at that point? Or I don't know which one, what version of that it is. Maybe it's just Magic Keyboard 2. But I would bet that they want to sync up their keyboards. And now that they've built this keyboard style that's in the iPad and the laptop, that they would want that to be their going forward desktop keyboard, you know, give it a spin and then keep it out there for 10 years like they do. So that would be my guess, is that they will do that. And I think that's fine. I prefer the keyboard on the iPad and the laptop to the desktop Magic Keyboard at this point.
That's right.
I get that Bluetooth Magic Keyboard and I'm like, oh, it's not quite as good. It's good though. It's a good keyboard. I have one in a little case, and that used to be my travel keyboard for my iPad. And it's good. Everybody gets to choose. It's fine. It's fine. Anyway, that's my point, is that I was happy as a clam with laptop keyboards, and if that was all I could ever use again, I'd be okay with it. It would be fine. But since I am parked at a desk with an iMac in front of me, and there's nobody here to really annoy with my keyboard typing, I'm happy to make noise with my keyboard. It's fun.
Yeah. I think that was one of the problems I had with the mechanical, incidentally, was like I sometimes type when I'm on podcasts and I feel like I had to type like really carefully to not be heard.
Yeah, for a while I actually had two keyboards out. I would have my podcast keyboard that I would get for when I was on a podcast, but now I either don't type and don't care, or I mute myself, or I type real quiet, like, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. You have to talk to Mike Hurley about whether he has to take out my keyboard sounds from upgrade. I don't know. Any year-end stuff? What we didn't do this year is sort of shameless best of the year gift guide, any of that stuff. I thought about it and I was like, nah, No, I do have the upgrades coming up on Monday, so I will actually need to think about it over the weekend.
You know, it's funny. I will say this. Yeah. I don't always vote in the upgrade or nominate things. But this year I did. And you know what? I spent some time and I actually nominated something in every single category. And I was very proud of myself for actually coming up, like, because there were things where it's like, some of them was like, oh, I got to think about this a little bit. And then after I spent a while thinking about it, I was like, oh, clearly it's X. I don't remember what's in there because I don't think I got sent a receipt or something telling me what I nominated. So I've already forgotten about half of them. But I felt like it wasn't. Oftentimes it's like pulling teeth to try and remember, like, what happened this year? What did I watch? What did I use? Like, did I buy any hardware? Did I buy any software? Like, it's just sometimes kind of blurs together, especially this year. And so I was very proud that I managed to be able to pick out something in every single category without feeling like, nah, I'm just going to throw a dart at something and pick whatever it hits. So I'm very interested to hear what you guys come up with.
Yeah, I'm excited because I thought this was a lot of good stuff this year, right? So I'm excited about that too. So I look forward to finding out what I think about this year later on Upgrade. Tune in for that, everybody. Yeah, it was. I mean, this was the. I just finished writing. It's going to go up next week. I just finished writing my Macworld piece where I evaluate my predictions from the previous year. Because what I do, this is the just if you were thinking of becoming, dear listener, an opinion columnist, and you think, wow, well, you know, writing almost every week seems like a big challenge. I'd advise you to do things like come up with stuff you do every year, because I get to the end of the year and it's like past me gave myself a little gift, which is I write three articles at the end of December, and it's looking back at my previous predictions and then Mac predictions and iOS predictions. And it's three column ideas I don't have to have because they're just already there. And I've done this the last like 3 or 4 years. It's great. So I just wrote my evaluation one, and the one that made me laugh was I've essentially, like, I feel like I've predicted Apple going to ARM Macs every year. And the joke in the column is basically like, well, you know, you keep doing that long enough and eventually you'll probably be right.
Yep.
And so I got that this year. But that was on the Mac side, it was a momentous year. I predicted it being more revolutionary than I think it was, and I feel that that is because Apple chose a slightly different path, which is to go out with those first Macs, having them look the same and be familiar, and very much what they did with Intel. I think that we all know that going to ARM on their platform on the Mac is, it gives them the opportunity to do some very different things, but not yet. I think, like, you know, baby steps first. Just, it's such a leap to have the M1 that you don't really need to also reinvent the laptop. You could just say, here's a MacBook Air with an M1, and it's pretty amazing. Here's a MacBook Pro with an M1. Here's a Mac Mini with an M1. So, but, you know, still, in terms of milestones for the Mac, it's a big one, even though I think the biggest changes are yet to come. It was a big year. And then on the iOS side, especially the iPad, like we mentioned, the keyboard, that Magic Keyboard, I think, is one of the products of the year, just because it brought this totally different, I mean, with the cursor support plus that Magic Keyboard, that Apple has a official first party iPad keyboard and trackpad is something that, you know, I wanted. And I predicted it in my column, but I basically said, look, this isn't going to happen, but I'm going to predict it because I want it to happen. And it happened. So sometimes wishes do come true, Dan, is what I'm saying.
I feel like I've used up all mine then.
Yeah, well, what has this wrought? But honestly, the pandemic had already started, and it was one of those things where it was like a little shining light at the beginning of the pandemic was, but here's this keyboard thing for the iPad. I'm like, yeah, great. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I did my two columns, which are one, a look back at the biggest moves Apple made in the year, and then look forward to what's going to happen next year. And I actually, my what's going to happen next year piece should probably come out Monday-ish or sometime. That one, I struggled a little more with that this year. I mean, there are some easy ones, right? Like I wrote a little bit about how the ARM transition is going to proceed and how we're going to get, you know, more capable chips, probably some redesigns of the rest of the Mac lineup. And then looking ahead at some of the other stuff that Apple's looking at, it does feel like in some ways there's a wide open area of possibility for them this coming year. And I'm curious, the two areas I sort of focused on that I'm curious about, one, this is a thing that came up more recently, but I actually think it's interesting to see, and I don't think we'll see it next year, but we may see some movement towards it, which is the Apple building its own cellular modem thing. Like, they're just starting to sort of spin that up now based on some stories that were circulating in the last week or so. You know, obviously they bought Intel last year and then had a deal with Qualcomm. So interesting to see Apple continue to bring infrastructure under its own control. Makes a lot of sense. And while I don't think next year's phones or iPads or Apple Watches will have Apple custom-built chips necessarily, you know, we might hear something. You never know. And then the other thing being, I'm curious to see now that we've spent 9 months in the pandemic, whether any things that were decided at the beginning of the pandemic might ripple out in terms of decisions that Apple is making about its products adapting to the world that we live in, right? Because like there were some things that they, you know, they could make a software tweak here and there. I think about, for example, they let you turn off the ability to do the FaceTime thing where the people's faces got bigger or smaller depending on if they were talking, because that was maddening. But, you know, for example, they got dinged for not upgrading the cameras in the MacBooks. And it's like, well, you know, they were fine, but they were also probably in development already, and swapping them out later, unlikely.
Yeah.
But if Apple's doing a machine next year, they have some time to think about that now and think about, well, what is the ultimate impact? Can we make an improvement here that will be beneficial not only in this immediate situation that we're in, but also considering that maybe remote work and video conferencing will be more of a thing. So maybe we should spend more time on upgrading these cameras.
Yeah, also, I mean, everybody talks about like, well, that's just a component. But I think Apple probably prefers to have it be like a wholesale hardware redesign, right? Like they have everything wired, they have everything there, and it's like maybe you could just swap out the part with a new part, but I think Apple's probably looking at that saying, well, you know, the way it's wired, way it's the size of the space.
Plus, why do that if we want to do a true depth camera, say in an iMac, for example?
And I think that is a big part of it too, is like, can we do true depth? Can we do other things? So let's wait for the big step forward and not make any waves now. But the result is that camera is kind of crappy. It's true.
Yeah, but it's fine. I mean, thinking about that and thinking about how we've seen society change a little bit over the last year as we adapt to it, will Apple make more decisions that are reflective of that, both in terms of the products they make and in terms of how they do business? I don't know. I'm curious. I think we've talked a lot about what the impact of this might ultimately be, even after, you know, we quote unquote return to normal. And I think there will be some lasting impact, and it will be interesting to see if Apple takes that into account when they think about their product roadmap and what they're building and, you know, what things people might use it for.
That's a good point that record, you know, Mac sales, and obviously they think driven by the need for people to have mobile, you know, have laptops and stuff at home, being able to work at home. But that is an interesting way of thinking about the next step, which is, can you take lessons from the pandemic when you're making decisions about your next generation laptops? That's really an interesting question. I'm curious to see if something happens there, or you know, we'll see.
I don't know. I would love. I mean, for example, you and I have talked a lot in other places about products and solutions for doing things like recording podcasts, which are also happen to overlap with things like I don't know what you would call it. It's not quite groupware, but like, you know, video conferencing solutions, things like Zoom, things like Slack, things like Teams, you know, and thinking, well, you know, Zoom is probably the best in terms of the product goes, but there's a lot of distasteful things about that company. And a lot of the other solutions there are really aimed at things more like, you know, business, right? Teams is aimed at something more like a business. Slack doesn't really have robust conferencing features, and the stuff it does have is aimed at enterprise. Apple's got FaceTime, which is pretty good, but as I already mentioned, there were some limitations with it before, and it really is aimed at video conferencing, not at anything else.
And it only works on Apple devices.
Yeah. So I don't know. Would Apple consider like, well, maybe there's a way for us to expand this. Maybe there's a way for us to do something else with this. Or are they satisfied with what it is? I honestly don't know, but it's something that if I were Apple, I would be looking hard at that right now, because, you know, when the stick that you like to beat people over the head with is, we're all about privacy and security, and you see people using Zoom, which is a company that is getting constantly knocked for lacks of privacy and security, seems like you might have an opening there.
I think the problem is that I doubt Apple, having watched Apple for a long time, although they sometimes dream that they could do an enterprise product or a business product, they can't. It's not, they can't.
It's true.
It's not for them.
And it's not even that I think it would have to be an enterprise product so much as there's a lot of people using Zoom for non-enterprise things now. And
well,
I wonder
that's,
if
that's true.
Yeah, I wonder if you can expand that circle a little bit, and like in terms of like, well, if only FaceTime had X, like maybe that would be more useful. I, for example, I just really want them to get rid of the stupid bubble view because I think it's terrible. But you know, they sort of took a concession in that direction with the whole turning off the automatically adjusting thing. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe that was because people finally started using it and realizing like, oh, this is actually really not great if you have 20 people on a call or something. Maybe we should rethink this. So yeah, I don't know. I think it would just be interesting to see how Apple is going to take away lessons from the pandemic and from the way that we've changed how we use technology. And as you said, they sell a lot of products. So, you know, people are using their stuff.
That they do. No, there's a lot to look forward to, which is good because this year is over. Almost.
Almost. Counting
down. Asterisk. There's a cat standing up. There it goes. Cats roaming around. We got some new cats this year. Anything else you're thinking of to talk about before we wrap it up for 2020? Put it in the bin? Set it on fire?
Right before we go, I think, you know, we should definitely talk, just because I find it hilarious, about whether or not we'll be driving into our Apple cars in 2024.
Oh.
I just find these stories very funny because, to me, the Apple car story is always, it's one of those things that's perpetually like 5 years away.
Oh, yeah. It's like Fusion. The answer it'll be powered by Fusion. Desktop Fusion.
And every time there's a story about it, like you see a big headline trumpeted like this week, Reuters, reputable organization, like 2024. And then if you read the article, a lot of it is like, well, but it might also still be just an autonomous driving system. They might scale it back. And it could be later than 2024. And it's like, well, then you've told me absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Like this is not even a story then, other than there is still development happening and they don't really know what they want to do with it.
Well, I guess what I would say is, looking at Tim Cook's Apple, I wouldn't put it past them.
No.
I think that they are disciplined, but I think they are fearless. Like, if they feel like they can enter that market, they will. I do wonder, they talk about them getting a manufacturing partner, and like, I don't think there's necessarily like a Foxconn for a whole car.
Cars. Yeah.
I know they're car supply chains and stuff, but I keep looking at it and thinking, is this going to be Apple making a deal with a car maker? And is that deal going to be more Motorola rocker, or is it going to be more singular in the iPhone? Where there's a car maker who's so, the car makers are falling over themselves to work with Apple, but Apple's going to make demands that are extreme. But I mean, let's be honest, Apple could buy a car maker if it really wanted to.
Sure.
It dwarfs those car makers, and it doesn't want to, right? But it could make a partnership and do an investment. I think this is when these car rumors were going hot and heavy a couple of years ago, I think that's what I said, is more likely that they would make a strategic investment and a partnership with a partner, perhaps via joint venture or something like that. And it would be one of those things where Apple gets all of the kind of access to a supply chain and manufacturing facilities and stuff like that. There are a lot of, I mean, I don't know the current state of affairs in car manufacturing, but I get the impression that there are a lot of places in the US especially that don't, that used to make cars that don't, or that don't make cars at the level they did. I just am thinking there's probably factory space for Apple that to work with a car partner to build something,
right?
And then they could potentially use their dealerships or something like that. But Apple could set up their own. Like, I feel like you could push this down the road a ways before you have to decide if you're Apple, if you want to be, you know, selling cars or not.
Right. And I think Tesla pointed out that you don't have to be an established automaker.
Absolutely.
To enter this field. So
but
the,
it did
the
take
proof
Tesla,
of concept is there.
It did take Tesla a long time. And I think that
the
problem with that is that an Apple product, like an Apple car, is not going to start in the volumes of Tesla.
Oh, no.
They won't do
product
even, like that.
Even Tesla. Yeah, right. Yeah. I think it's, they've proved it can be done. It is still, there's still a ton of hurdles, right, in the way. And I think ultimately Apple just has to decide if it wants to be in that business or not. I agree with you. They could totally do it. You know, they have enough money. They have the resources. I think they could make that happen. The question is, do they want to? Is there a reason for them to be in that space with all the attendance stuff that comes along with it, right? Like, because you got to go through all the government regulations and you got to do all, you got to, there's a lot of, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's there. And ultimately, you're coming out with a product that's, let's be honest, it's Apple. It's never going to be cheap. And, you know, there was that story John Gruber shared this week about how they spec'd it out and were like, oh no, it's too, it's ridiculously expensive.
The Project Titan, the original car, they're like, right, looked at it and who knows what that price was. But
I don't
like,
know what it was, but
hey, everybody, it's a $300,000 car.
Exactly.
We can't sell that.
High six figures. And, you know,
$800,000 car. Great. Right.
It's not going to be cheap. And it's going to be something where, it's going to be for a specific class of people. Yeah. And the question is, people turn their cars over and cars aren't high volume items necessarily.
So this is my, this is my theory. My theory right now is Apple's going to try to find a car maker who is struggling and wants to hitch itself to Apple. Not necessarily struggling in terms of sales either, but struggling in their electric transition.
Yeah.
And if they can find one, they may not, because I think all the car makers are realizing that they just have to really embrace electric cars. But somebody who's struggling and thinks this is our solution is essentially, we're going to hand over the keys to Apple, and we're going to use our, and that's going to be the sales point, is it's like our great expertise in making cars, Apple's great expertise in technology come together in this new thing. And it's maybe not even an Apple, because I don't think there's going to be an Apple car. Maybe there will, but I think it's going to be like
BMW with Apple technology
Or it's going to be like Saturn. You remember Saturn?
Yeah.
There's like, it's a new car brand that's from Apple and car maker X. And it's like all the greatness of the, and it's like a luxury. It'll be like, okay, more like Acura maybe or something like that. One of those luxury brands of other car makers. But like, it'll be a like luxury brand that is from Apple and Company X, these cars, and they're going to be more expensive, but they're going to be the most advanced electric, super connected, brilliant, smart cars on the planet. That would be, not knowing anything, and I think we may even have a listener, and I know we have a reader who is like, it works in the car industry and writes about the car industry, so maybe he can write in. But that's my gut feel is like, how would Apple do it? Is maybe something like that where Apple has control of the product to a certain degree, but is also able to take advantage of the fact that there is car maker expertise and kind of split the difference a little bit and create something that is, and that gives Apple the ability to learn about the market. It gives Apple the ability to walk away if they have a problem with it, or to bring in other partners. Like, there's a bunch of things that because I think Apple would have to, I mean, they would have the upper hand in anything
like
that.
Thing,
but I think you could find a car partner who'd be willing to do it for the cachet of being Apple's partner.
Yeah. The other thing I would maybe be willing to put a wager down on is the idea that if no automotive product comes out of this, that the technologies developed in there might trickle down into other products eventually. Like, essentially, like, oh, we did a bunch of AR stuff and the car never worked, but hey, this thing's pretty great. Let's trickle that down into some other product.
That's the easiest. I think the easiest fallback for Apple in terms of automotive is that they create essentially CarPlay for for internal systems, and again, they find partners who say that this allows us to charge a premium
white label type thing,
and make it this. I don't even think white label, because you want Apple front and center. You know, you say this is one of those Apple cars, right? Like, it's a premium level of sensors and intelligence, and the. I mean, I was there's a tweet by Quinn. This came up in Upgrade about like what tech present would I get if price was no object, and my answer was a Tesla. And I was thinking about Quinn, the Stasi Labs YouTuber, who pointed out, because he has a Tesla, and he said, it's ruined me for other cars, because the stuff that Tesla cares about is stuff that other car makers kind of don't care about in terms of like the attention to detail and the internal systems and the interface and stuff like that. And I thought, yeah, that's why so many people who gravitate toward Apple stuff and care about, you know, like user experience and design and stuff. And the truth is that I at least from a computer person standpoint, car people will differ, but like, I feel like car makers just don't care about the kind of experience that we care about.
Sure,
they care about an older some of them don't care at all. And some of them care about an older mechanical experience, but like the technology stuff vexes them. And so I think about Tesla and Tesla's advantage being sweating the details on the user experience. And I think, well, that's how Apple sells an internal systems sort of thing that car makers want to partner with Apple to put in their cars, is because they've got to know, you know, at least some of them have to know that they're just bad at that. And what if you could get Apple to design the interior and the systems of your car for you, the computer parts of your car for you, and the sensors and stuff like that? And I know that most companies will have a "not invented here" kind of thing, where they'll be like, "No, we can do good. I'm not stupid like everyone says, right?" But one of them will realize that they are, and that Apple would do a better job. And then, because I do think that that's part of the secret sauce of Tesla, is that stuff. And they're just better at that than everyone, because everybody else is like, "Oh, I'll integrate this radio from over here." I was talking to Lauren about this the other day, that like what really sets me off, you know, we have a Nissan Leaf. It's fine. It's fine. It's nice. But like, and then I drill down and I'm like, what, we just had our time change. And like, it has two clocks that have to be set separately, because they're non-integrated dashboard systems, because that thing has three different, completely disconnected dashboard systems.
Oh, yeah.
And it's terrible.
It's maddening. I mean, there was a reason I replaced my radio last year? God, it was only last year. It was a compatible unit. It was same OEM, but it was CarPlay compatible. And I was like, I just really want the CarPlay. And even then, like, I still have like an in-dash little mini computer thing that is totally separate, which is where the Bluetooth used to be. So technically there were two Bluetooth systems in the car, and it's like, oh boy, this is why.
It's because they integrate little parts.
Yeah, instead exactly. Well, they bought it. I mean, product. that radio is an OEM, and they just shove it in there and they make it work, right?
And
like
that,
and
what you want is the whole product, and the auto industry does not make the whole product, because they make the car and then they consider the dashboard. And forgive me if there's some car company that has decided they're going to take back the dashboard, but like they don't manufacture those systems, and there are companies that do that for them, and that's the problem. That if you look at something like Tesla, like, no, Tesla designs the systems. Tesla does the software.
It's the big weakness for Apple, though, I think, because they love controlling the whole thing, right? And so I think that's the big struggle for them, is that if they find a partner they are happy with, that's great, but they also, deep down, they want to do the whole thing.
I feel like, I mean, then again, that Reuters story talked about battery technology. So, like, that's beyond, I keep thinking, like, Apple doesn't want to make tires. Apple doesn't want to make wheels. Apple doesn't want to make trains or whatever. But Apple doesn't want to make brakes. But Apple does want to apparently make batteries, but it's true. Battery tech has other applications for Apple. All of the sensor-based stuff has augmented reality applications for Apple. Like, there's lots of other directions that can go down. I think the ultimate question about Apple and cars, I can't believe we're talking about this again, but here it is, the time has come around again, is does Apple believe that there is, that if you look out into 2050, and you say, what does a car look like in 2050? And then, and you say, can we make that car? Can we be the one that gets there? Can we provide a transformative thing for the auto industry that they are incapable of doing themselves because of, you know, innovator's dilemma, kind of, they're stuck in their ways and they can't break out of them. Is there an opportunity for us to redefine the car for the next 30 years? And I would almost take Tesla as a data point in favor of that, because Apple has to look at Tesla and be like that, where those cars are not like other cars, and Tesla's got its issues, believe me, but, it is telling, I would say, that at least I have not heard of any car from a major car manufacturer that is like a Tesla, where they're like, oh yeah, well, we realized that Tesla was right and we need to control all our systems and build a user experience up from the ground up. No, they're still, even modern fancy electric cars, they still got OEM radios and OEM control systems.
Exactly.
And to a certain degree, at least. So,
yep.
If you're Apple and you look at it and you sort of despair, and you've also got that little heady shot of arrogance/confidence that nobody does it better than Apple, you get an Apple car.
I also think that's one reason a lot of those manufacturers have gravitated towards producing things with CarPlay and Android Auto compatibility, right? It's realizing,
take
it's better. like People want it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think CarPlay could turn into a reference system like this. Because if Apple sort of says, well, look, we supply, this is the kind of sensor you need. And, you know, it needs to be like this. But we will produce the entire kind of car interface. And here's the standard for it. And that may happen regardless of Apple's participation, because I would imagine Google is thinking about the same thing too, which is, can we provide a layer above the whole car, mm-hmm. you know, and be the UX layer for the whole car, and that the OEM stuff and the stuff from the car maker itself all plugs in way down deep below. And the people who care about the user experience are up at the top. But if I'm a car maker, I want to control the complete user experience. The problem is that they haven't, and I'm not a car maker. So there you go. Because I look at it and think, there was this car. I took a picture of it. I think I never, did I write an article about it? It was this rental car that I had when I was visiting my parents in Arizona. And literally, it was using the Ford Sync system. So it was like Microsoft. Oh,
yeah. Yep.
And I swear it looked like I was in the lunar lander from the Apollo missions. There were buttons everywhere.
Yeah.
And they were three separate power buttons to turn different things on. And I thought, this is not good. What are they doing?
Years ago, I had a rental car in LA where this decade. And it was a fairly new car. I think it might have even had the sync thing in it too. It had a dial pad in the dash, like a touch tone dial pad. And I was like,
yeah,
why? How often are people dialing numbers?
The Microsoft Sync had that. And it was because you were supposed to input, I don't know, again, you input the coordinates into the system to tell the lunar lander when to land is why
oh
it's there.
Yeah,
but it's
it
like,
really it,
they felt like they needed a number input for, I don't know, radio station numbers or something.
But it was like a literal phone dial pad. And it's like, it was like literally for dialing numbers, and it had the letters on it and everything. Yeah. And you're thinking like, you're one step away from having a rotary dial in your car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Anyway, by the way, before we go, I just want to say Dan just slipped in a little Easter egg there for everybody, because he said this decade, which means Dan subscribes to the theory that a decade runs from, in this case, 2011 to 2020, because otherwise this decade would have been sometime this year, because this year would be the decade of the 20s.
Oh, man.
If you believe
I definitely was thinking about that instead of just saying meaning in the past 10 years.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, this is our last podcast of the decade by your definition, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy New Year. We aren't doing a podcast next week. Did we make that clear? But you got this one. And until next year / decade, if you're that way. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Bye, everybody.